This is Brother Hansen from Truth and Life Ministries here in Lakeside, Arizona. It's good to be here with you today. We're going to get right into our study. We've been studying the patriarchs, and we're on Joseph now. And I do believe it'll be interesting. The story of Joseph gives us clues that date the events of Joseph. Probably written down. It's possibly that it was written after, centuries after, but it's doubtful because these stories had to be accurate. Let's go ahead and get into the study. One of the most dramatic narratives in Genesis is the tale, or actually the story, history, of Joseph. The story's fascination has much to do with the way that it is told, as it does with the events of Joseph's life. For while the earlier stories of Genesis read as though they were selected from a vast and ancient oral tradition, Joseph's story seems to have been written down all of a piece. The story reads like a short but complete novel. Joseph is adored by his father, but despised by his jealous older brothers, whose treachery leads to his exile in Egypt. Instead of being lost to slavery, however, Joseph gains favor by his intelligence and his talent. You know, this is the fascinating thing about Joseph, is his incredible talent and intelligence made room for him. And he just graduated. I mean, sometimes you just can't keep a good man down. And Joseph is one of these good men. He's one of my favorites. He's one of my favorite people that of example for a man, how a man should conduct himself. He gains favor by his intelligence and talents, and his talent as an interpreter of dreams. He rises to a position of power, second only to that of Pharaoh himself. The story actually reaches a climax when Joseph once again meets with his brothers, actually, and arranges a reunion with his father. The story comes full cycle when Joseph dies in Egypt and is finally taken home to Canaan to be buried. It is thought that the story of Joseph might have been written near the time of King Solomon, about the 10th century B.C., by which time the patronage of the court made the creation of new literary works possible. The period described in the story, however, is much earlier. The events of Joseph's life in Egypt seem to date somewhere between 1710 and 1570 B.C. When Asian invaders arriving from the north through Syria and Palestine controlled Egypt from their capital on the Nile and at Avaris, the Egyptians referred to these foreigners as the Hyksos. Hyksos, which means rulers of foreign lands. As foreigners themselves, many believe the Hyksos were probably more tolerant of the immigrants than Egyptian rulers might have been. It's unlikely that Joseph could have achieved power and position in Egypt without the presence of foreign rule. Not surprisingly, the area called Goshen, a region on the Nile Delta where Hebrews are believed to have lived during that period, was in an immediate area of the Hyksos capital. During the period of Hyksos rule, and for a long while afterwards, or until about 1300 BC, there were great migrations of people in and out of Egypt, owing to drought and famine and the slave trade. The approximate dates of 1710 to 1300 BC corresponds with the Old Testament statement that Abraham's descendants sojourned in Egypt for 400 years. And more than just a tolerance of immigrants suggests the Hyksos period as that of Joseph's time in Egypt. Now, at that period, as Joseph's time in Egypt, there are a lot of other clues as well. For instance, when the Hyksos won supremacy on the Nile, they introduced new military methods into Egypt, the most significant of which were the horse and the chariot. It was not until after the arrival of the Hyksos that scenes of travel, battle, and hunting by chariot began to appear in paintings and relief carvings on Egyptian walls. And it is in the story of Joseph, actually, that these chariots and horses appear for the first time in the Bible. Removing his signet ring from his hand, Pharaoh put it on Joseph's hand. He arrayed him in garments and fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in the chariot of his second in command. That's in Genesis, the 41st chapter, verse 42 and 43. When Joseph's brothers arrived in Egypt, they did not recognize him in his role as a Pharaoh's overseer. Dressed in Egyptian clothing and pretending to need a translator to talk to them, Joseph had been accepted by the Egyptians, although they never really recognized Hebrews as the part of their culture. We learn in one scene when Joseph's brothers are at his house that Joseph said, "Serve the meal." They served him by himself and them by themselves. And the Egyptians who ate with them by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews. And this is nothing new. It's just the way it was. Genesis 43:31, 32. In general, despite their centuries in Egypt, the Hebrews seem to be influenced only minimally by the surrounding culture. Even over the course of four centuries, they kept their customs. At least in part, this continual separation of cultures may have been due to the fact that the Hebrews, living in Goshen under the Hyksos, were among their own people with little need to interact in Egyptian life. Later in bondage in Egypt, the choice was not theirs. They were in bondage, slavery. Now, although Egyptian culture probably had only a minimal impact in the Hebrew life, it shows up in subtle ways in the story of Joseph, generally in the amount of emphasis given to certain parts of the story One of the best known tales of within the larger story, for instance, takes place when Joseph first arrives in Egypt and is sold to Potiphar. Ultimately, in that household, Joseph has to rebuff the advances of Potiphar's wife, who cast her eyes on him and is thrown in prison when she claims he tried to lie with her. And in Egyptian literature at that time, there was an older story known as the Tale of Two Brothers. In the first part of this story, the two brothers, Anubis, who was married, and Bata, who was not, share a house. One day when Anubis is not home, his wife tries to seduce Bata, but is rejected. Fearing what will happen if her husband discovers the truth, the wife slanders Bata, and he is forced to flee for his life. The inclusion of the story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife in Genesis is another example attesting to the cultural authenticity of the Bible's narrative. The emphasis placed on dreams in the Joseph story is also interesting in the light of its time and setting. Dreams are mentioned earlier in Genesis, but whether those of Jacob or Laban, they are straightforward and easily understood. The dreams in the Joseph story, by contrast, are complex and symbolic. Each time Joseph interprets a dream, his life changes. Interpreting his own dreams as a boy leads to his expulsion from Canaan and from his entire life, his family. Actually, his brothers, but providing that service in Egypt for the chief baker and cupbearer gets Joseph out of prison, and interpreting dreams for the Pharaoh wins Joseph his position of power. Actually, the Hebrews believe that dreams are meaningful, and so does a lot of other cultures as well. Dreams did not play a large role in their society as they did in that of their neighbors. Both the Egyptians and the Assyrians had books devoted to dream interpretation, believe it or not. And they made use of dream interpreters. You remember when Daniel was asked to, well, actually, Daniel volunteered to interpret the dream of Nebuchadnezzar. There's no such profession among the Hebrews, so the only men in the Bible who specialize in those skills are Joseph and later Daniel, both of whom perfect their talents in the service of foreign rulers. And this is what happened when they were taken. They were actually taken into a strange land, and they actually interpreted dreams accurately. Daniel did the same thing, and Joseph also doing the interpretation of dreams and for the different ones in the Egyptian regime. But we see that Daniel did the same thing for Nebuchadnezzar, and he advanced him very rapidly. Ancient Egyptians took great care of burying their dead with the things that they would need in the afterlife. From as early as 2400 BC, these burial gifts included hieroglyphic inscriptions on the inside of tombs. The inscriptions were spells, actually, meant to protect the dead, as they made the passage from this world to the next. By the 16th century, during Hyksos' rule, spells were also placed inside coffins. They were written on sheets of papyrus, 12 to 18 inches high, a left that was glued together to, that were, they were glued together from scrolls that measured up to 90 feet in length. Painted illustrations appeared only on scrolls made for particularly wealthy or prestigious persons. Egyptians called these manuscripts spells for coming forth by day. Though they are known today by a name given them in the 19th century, the Book of the Dead, no two scrolls are identical, though all have the same general purpose, helping the Ba, or soul, on its way, its journey. For instance, the Ba had to face many ordeals, including hideous monsters, powerful inquisitors. But by knowing these creatures' names, which were provided on the scrolls, the Ba could get by them safely and ultimately reach an afterlife of eternal joy. Goes to show you the superstitious beliefs of some of these. Well, I'm going to stop there. We're simply out of time. We'll take this up tomorrow, and I hope that you'll you're enjoying this, some of these, because they're very, very interesting, some of these patriarchs. Go to our website, krciradio.com, and shoot us an email. Let us know you're listening, krciradio.com. Call us at 928-368-6766 and leave a message. We'll gladly call you back. Write to us. Let us know you're listening. Write to us and let us know that you're out there. We'd love to hear from you. That's KRCI Radio, Box 424, Lakeside, Arizona, 85929. And may God richly bless you. Until tomorrow. Well, that's our time for today. Until tomorrow's broadcast, it's Brother Hansen saying, study, show yourself approved to God.